Well, welcome to part two of our forum tonight, and once again, we will start with opening statements, move on to prepared questions, and then questions from the audience, followed by closing statements. Answers are timed. Our timer, Dan Gary, will give you a 10-second warning by holding up a yellow paper sign. Once you see the yellow 10 seconds remaining sign, we ask that you wrap things up. A red stop sign will be waved when the time limit is reached. Now we'll start with our opening statements. We'll start alphabetically by last name, and remember you have 60 seconds for your response. We'll start with the at-large candidates and Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. I want to say thank you to the Alumni Association and for all of you who came out tonight. Thank you. My bio tells you that I'm a scholarship kid from Sandstone who went on to have a successful career in healthcare. Let me connect the dots as to why that matters. I've had lots of experience in strategic planning and leading through complexity. My track record is strong, and I'm ready for the next challenge. I choose higher ed. The University of Minnesota is in the healthcare business big time. As a premier provider of direct medical services in a competitive marketplace, providing the workshops in which our students are taught, student success in this area is paramount, as those who train in Minnesota, to the tune of 80%, stay to become our future providers. Finally, the research mission feeds our medical device and biomedical industries. During my time as Chief Operating Officer and CEO at Hennepin County Medical Center, I led a governance change. I well understand the role differentiation between CEO, governing body chair, and the governance. I would hope to bring that expertise with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Susan Adams Lloyd.
Hi, I'm Susan Adams Lloyd, CEO of Better Business Bureau of Minnesota, a proud graduate of the University of Minnesota, and I'm honored to be here tonight. Thank you for everybody that came. I've held many senior leadership positions in complex business organizations and community boards, and have chaired several of them, including the University of Minnesota Alumni Association and the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. I bring a unique perspective to this candidacy: a business leader, a board member, a community volunteer, a recent college graduate, a parent of two recent college graduates, as well as an athlete. Preserving the U's vitality as a statewide learning institution, employer, and economic driver must be equal targets. With a new president and provost, what a great time to take a long view of the entire university system. Building bridges between the business community and the university is imperative, especially critical for a dwindling and aging workforce across the state, and I have connections in both. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Mary Davenport.
Good evening. I'm pleased to join you tonight. Thank you for allowing me to share my passion in support of the University of Minnesota system with its unique land-grant heritage, mission, amazing campuses, and extension services. I come to you with over three decades of addressing critical issues in higher education, a record of creating environments that enable access, equal opportunity, and inclusion for students, faculty, and staff, and evidence of delivering leadership with a commitment to consultation, collaboration, and accountability. The university and higher education overall is at a critical juncture, facing challenges that get at the heart of research, changing demographics, financial sustainability, and how the university can contribute and continue its contribution to Minnesota's economic vitality, quality of life, and global challenges. My experiences, skills, and knowledge translate well into becoming an effective governing board member committed to serving the university and the people of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mary. Robert Eddy.
Thank you to the Alumni Association for having me here tonight. I am an alumnus of the University of Minnesota. I'm currently retired from the telecommunications industry. I'm here because I want to make sure that our university, and therefore my university, is the best that it can be in all the areas that we undertake. If we fail in that mission of being the best, we risk finding it harder to attract tuition money, donors, legislative support, highest quality students and faculty, and national rankings. My experience with the university has been to invest my time and financial support in various aspects of the university. And I think that we need help in some areas we're doing right. I'd like to address some of those.
Thanks, Robert. Kao Lee, Hylene Herr.
Yes. Thank you so much to the Alumni Association, to legislators that are in the audience, to community members, and then my friends that are here to support me this evening. Again, my name is Cowley Eileen Herr, but I go by Eileen, a name I chose for myself when my family became U.S. citizens. I am very honored and overwhelmed to be on this great candidate board. Everyone here is so talented, and sometimes I've been questioning, do I have the skills, do I have the talent to serve? And the answer is yes, because I am an adventurer. I am never afraid to rush to do things, love people, and go places. I am the first in my family to go to college. I am the first Hmong female to graduate from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota Law School, and the first Hmong female admitted to the Minnesota State Bar and to clerk with the Minnesota Supreme Court. In being the first, I had to master my surrounding and build common bonds with those around me. I had to reach out as well as to let others in. I had to influence and be influenced, as I never forgot that I was Hmong, different, unique, and that I had a lot to offer the world. The University of Minnesota, its work, students, and result touches upon and enriches the lives of all Minnesotans, the nation, and indeed the entire world. The university has a role and responsibility to create the minds and solutions that we need for the future and society that we want.
Thanks, Eileen. My apologies. We ran out of time.
Very good statement to end on. Thank you.
Moving on to Dean Johnson.
Thank you very much. My name is Dean Johnson from Willmar, and I've served on the Board of Regents for the last 12 years. What I have learned during my tenure on the Board of Regents is this. As a board and individual board member, it is our duty to create a culture and a system, an environment, an academic setting of our land-grant university that promotes academic and student success. The ultimate goal is for our students to graduate with a diploma for life's vocation. Coupled with that, we are a research university, a top research university in the world, in medicine, in biomedics, in veterinary medicine, in nursing, human development, and the list goes on and on. As a regent, we need to be sensitive to the following: tuition, diversity, academic medicine, academic freedom, a safe campus, a competitive scholarly faculty, our mental health of our students, and our campuses at Crookston, Morris, Duluth, Rochester, and St. Paul. I ask for your support as we continue this endeavor.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you, and thanks to everyone for being here. My passion for the University of Minnesota began a long time ago, and it comes from you giving me and my family our start in life. We came from a small farm family in west central Minnesota, four children in the family. Our parents never had the opportunity for higher education, but the four of us got 7 degrees from the University of Minnesota. The reason I'm passionate is, and the reason I'm focused on access and affordability, is I want our story to be the story of as many other families in Minnesota as possible. And at this point in life, I want to give back to the university the benefits of the broad cross-section of experiences that I've gained in my life because of the university. These positions are broad, but none are more important, really, than serving in the legislature for 20 years, serving in the United States Congress for 8 years. And the things that I learned and the skills that I developed, I want to now apply to the university in order to make the university the best it can be.
Thank you, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
Thank you. I'm Sandy Weiss from Eagan, and thank you to the Alumni Association for hosting this forum. I've worked for more than 25 years in business and law-related positions in Minnesota companies. I've also worked in both state and federal government. I have a wide array of work experience, and that, combined with my 20 years of service on University of Minnesota-related boards, I believe has prepared me well for the role of a regent on the Board of Regents. As a University of Minnesota graduate, I'm always proud of the role that the U plays serving as the economic engine for the state of Minnesota. In the next few years, I believe that the U will face many challenges. We are now at a tipping point where we can no longer raise tuition in any significant way due to issues of accessibility and affordability for our students. As a result, we're going to have to do a lot more to expand upon earlier efforts to run the U in a much more efficient and much more effective way. I believe that the Board of Regents needs management and financial expertise to find opportunities to reduce costs and cut administrative overhead. I have this background from my experience in the business world. I also understand this.
Thanks, Sandy. We're going to have to move on in the interest of time. Sorry about that.
No problem.
And now we have our first question. The Board of Regents strives to focus its time on issues of greatest consequence to the university. What do you believe are the top three issues facing the university? We'll start with Susan Adams Lloyd.
Thank you very much, Jim. And remind me the time.
45 seconds.
Thank you for the clarification. Well, I mentioned in my introduction that I believe there are three equal targets that the university needs to focus on. Certainly, a statewide learning institution across, it's the backbone of the state, as well as being the premier employer, it's one of the largest employers in the state. And then the economic driver, hence the relationship with the business community that I outlined before. Each of these takes separate and accountable strategic planning, and it's not only the planning that's involved, but it's the execution thereof. So with a new president coming in, it's a perfect time to look at the statewide university system to see how all those three buckets can be achieved and fulfilled.
Thanks, Susan. Mary Davenport.
Big issues. There are a lot of them. I would say financial sustainability is on the top, and that includes discussions around tuition, private and public support, and not just looking at efficiencies and cuts, but what do we do to keep investments coming in so that we can grow our programs and keep them relevant. That's all tied to academic and research excellence, including the medical school and rankings and such. And then I would say presidential succession, which includes strategic planning, performance expectations of this new administration and accountability to that, and allowing the president designate to come in and be a thought leader within our communities and then being introduced to our statewide communities.
Thank you, Mary. Robert Eddy.
Thank you. The college rankings are a measure of excellence, which I think we should pay more attention to and strive to do better at, strive to increase our rankings. I think students want to go to an excellent institution. Tuition and cost control are another one that would be on my radar, and I think they go in hand. Our cost to operate this university has done nothing but go up in the last few years. And finally, the strategic plan and implementing it, not just writing one and put it on the shelf.
Thanks, Robert. Eileen Herr.
Yes. I think academic and educational excellence and being accessible, available, to all students. There is an educational attainment gap for students of color, disabled students, and poor students. In terms of getting a quality education, I do believe there needs to be quality teachers and opportunities to learn and to reach the full potential. And then lastly, research, the driving institution to find solutions that we need for the difficult problems that are facing our society.
Thanks, Eileen. Dean Johnson.
Thank you. The three issues that I would suggest are the most important, that we appreciate and remember that we are a land-grant institution, and that includes our academics, our research, and our outreach. Our academics are stellar. The incoming freshman class, 28.3 average ACT tests. That is outstanding in the Big Ten. In regard to research, 30% increase in our research dollars over the last 4 years. We want to continue in that trend. Second of all, the academic health. 70% of doctors that practice in Minnesota come from the University of Minnesota Academic Health and a Medical School. And finally, I believe it's very important that we transition and support our new president as she'll begin her duties on July 1st in the matters of faculty retention and student recruitment, and continue to make us one of the best universities in the United States.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you. I think, first of all, of course, the safety of our students is top priority, and that would include the mental health issues that we're dealing with today, sexual abuse on campus. Given that those are being handled properly, I think affordability and accessibility, as I said earlier, is absolutely critically important. We can't keep increasing tuition. We have to do a much better job of finding revenues, both here at the legislature, but in other ways, that research dollars and other approaches, and cutting costs where we can. Many of the costs that we believe were cut, I believe, actually have just been shifted to other areas. We need to make sure that they are real cuts in costs. And also, the final thing would be keeping Minnesota students in Minnesota. There's a much greater chance that they're going to stay in Minnesota if we have Minnesota students versus students who come from other places.
Thank you, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
I'd like to start with the workforce shortage issue in Minnesota. So Minnesota taxpayers contribute a lot to the University of Minnesota. And in return, the University of Minnesota can be part of the solution to our workforce shortages. Whether it's teachers in greater Minnesota or animal disease researchers in our ag community or information technology professionals for some of our Fortune 500 companies, the University of Minnesota can help provide the employees of the future. And I believe the Board of Regents can set strategic direction to help the university better align its programs to meet the needs of the workforce of Minnesota. Secondly, affordability and accessibility. And third, implementation of the mHealth agreement.
Thanks, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. I would put the three in this order, financial sustainability and relevance. I've heard a lot in the last couple of weeks about workforce shortages and whether we are training, educating people to stay in Minnesota to take some of those jobs. I also know that education in and of itself should be one of the missions for the University of Minnesota. Somewhere, when you think about affordability, you should be putting those things together. If the state needs workers, if our companies are requiring that they need a trained workforce, and we've got students coming out with crippling debt, there's a problem there. Seems to me there's something that we can do with that. The other two things I will mention quickly is the medical piece. I have commented before that I worry about the research engine relative to that, and I would want to put that on the front burner. And finally, we need to make sure that we transition our new CEO in very easily. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Before we move on to question two, I want to remind the audience to submit their own questions to the UMA staff members who have question cards. You can also tweet us at UMN Alumni. And here's our next question, and a reminder, 45 seconds for your answers. The board provides governance of the institution. Would you share your views on the characteristics of a healthy governance board and what makes a good regent? And we'll start with Mary Davenport.
Thank you. I would look at characteristics of a healthy board in two pieces, one being structural and the other being functional. Structurally, there needs to be diversity within the board members itself. I happen to have good experience in higher education, but there's need for finance, legal, and other attributes of board members themselves. Functionally, the regents need an effective board needs to clearly define expectations, goals, and accountability measures. And they need to be transparent in communications internally and externally and do some consultation and be ready to ask the hard questions, being a consumer of data and information.
Thank you, Mary. Robert Eddy.
Thank you. I would answer that there should be a division between the board governance and administration management. There is an old business acronym called POEM, Plan, Organize, Execute, Measure. The plan and the measure should be the purview of the board, the governing board. The organize and the execute should be the purview of the management administration. So on the board, we should plan what we're going to do, direct management to do it, and then measure whether or not it's been accomplished at the end.
Thanks, Robert. Eileen Herr.
Sure. In my opinion, good governance and what would make a good and excellent regent is that person has to be a strategic thinker. That person has to be creative, innovative, visionary, and courageous, able to assess progress made and to ask the hard questions and to move forward, even when tough decisions have to be made. And then once you've created your vision, to really be able to express this in down-to-earth terms to your executive, to have goals and outcomes and accountability.
Thanks, Eileen. Dean Johnson.
The Board of Regents member individually and collectively needs to learn to listen and practice listening. Second of all, be respectful of your fellow board members as well as the president and the administration. There may be differences of opinion, but I think respect toward those individuals is very, very important. The policies that we deal with relates to the culture and environment that I talked about in my opening comments. It's these policies that are set forth that will direct the university and the president and the administration. And that comes by way of a strategic plan. We have honestly wrestled with our strategic plan at the University of Minnesota as long as I have been on the board, and we continue to refine it and redo it. And so it's very important that we have that. But finally, I would say trust, to trust one another as fellow board members and trust one another in the area of the president.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Yes, thank you. I think each board member does have a responsibility to listen, to respect others, and to come to independent judgments, very similar to the work we do in the legislature. But in the end result, one has to build a consensus. They have to collaborate, and that's what the board does. But the Board of Regents should develop strategic thinking, strategic plans, work on the mission of the university, but then leave the administration to actually execute and to manage. But the most important thing, I think, for board members is to actually have that courage to listen and come to independent judgments and then work with the other members of the board to reach an overall consensus for the board itself. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
Well, many of the topics have been mentioned, but I think a good board member is strategic and not tactical. They're looking not just at reviewing the mission of the university, but also trying to look at the vision and help set that vision. I think it goes beyond reviewing your board materials, which might be very lengthy, and voting at meetings. I think it involves a lot of thought. It involves being creative, being innovative, and working well with others. So I think also the piece that hasn't been mentioned is that a good regent is also a liaison to students, to professors, to alumni, so that they're gathering the input of people who are experiencing the university daily.
Thank you, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. Beyond what's already been said, I would just add that any regent needs to bring their adult self into the room, play nice with others, listen, work to create an overall positive experience with the group in spirit and tone, don't and shouldn't hesitate to require the best efforts of everyone in the room and self-evaluate constantly.
Thanks, Lynn. Susan Adams Lloyd.
All eloquent answers, and I'll bring up the rear here by saying I have worked for boards and I have been on boards. And from my experience, I know boards work best when they hire their staff well, give thoughtful support, and as mentioned before, strategic direction, and then essentially get out of the way so that that board can provide the accountability but not get in the way. The most difficult challenges I've experienced with board are the ones that have lacked diversity of demographics, expertise, and perspective, and have become stale due to lack of turnover. And I've chaired several boards and know the importance of recruiting the talent, properly onboarding new members, and allowing for natural turnovers. Boards are like ponds without a fresh source of water. They become stale and stagnant and sometimes toxic.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
We'll move on now to our next question. How would you balance the university's academic excellence and the cost of attendance given the current pressures of limited budget resources? And we'll start with Robert Eddy.
Thank you, and I don't think those are mutually exclusive. You have two competing aspects of this. Here is people would think that it normally takes more money to get a better academic result. On the other hand, there are ways to cost control, I think, that maybe haven't been addressed. The cost of operating this university has gone up considerably in the last few years, even though that we had an incentive and goal by the previous president to do something else. So I think we need to work on that as one of the ways to make it more affordable, even with the same or better academics.
Thanks, Robert. Eileen Herr.
I always say, if you want the best, you have to spend to get the best. So if we want quality students and we want top academics, then we have to find ways to pay and support it. And balancing cost can be made in lots of creative ways. I think the board was creative in the very, very competitive, very, very needed fields. They've put a premium on it, and regular tuition. So I think we have to be creative in how we look for revenue to support what we need and what we deserve.
Thank you, Eileen. Dean Johnson.
The Balancing Act the legislature has, and a number of them are here this evening, is very difficult. During my time in the Senate, the high point of appropriations from the state of Minnesota to the University of Minnesota was 42% of the operations. Today, it's 17%. I understand the pressures that legislators have with the many needs and wants of people across the state, but I do think that a renewed investment on behalf of the legislature and the governor toward the university would certainly help to offset some of the tuition increases. Along with that, we just completed $90 million of costs that we took from administration and placed over into academics because of the priority that the current board has.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you. The University of Minnesota is an excellent institution because of the people of Minnesota. And we need to trust the people as we move forward. And I think we have to find ways to maintain that excellence, but also make it accessible to the people of our state. There are programs at the University of Minnesota, as I understand, that are not at full capacity. There are other colleges that are much further down the line of distance learning than we are at the university. And so when we get into these areas of expenditures, the what you'd call non-mission expenditures at the university, we have to take a much harder look at those expenditures so that we don't just resort to tuition increases as the solution to the budget issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
On this topic, I'd like to say you can't cut your way to greatness. And so I think the university has to determine what its priorities are and fully fund those priorities and look for reductions in areas that are not high on the priority list. In terms of excellence, too, I believe that we should look at alternative sources of revenue, including public-private partnerships. So the company I work for, a K-12 education company, it hurts me, but we have a public-private partnership with the University of Wisconsin, and they came to us and asked us to do the work with them. That public-private partnership that provides assessments in 39 states is bringing in about $40 to $50 million in revenues to the School of Education in Wisconsin. The University of Minnesota can do a lot more to develop its public-private partnerships.
Thanks, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. I don't believe that affordability and excellence are mutually exclusive and not in conflict. I do think, though, that there's constant hard work that needs to be done. People need to be relentless at looking for alternative sources of revenue, as well as cutting things that no longer make any sense. But I also think that there's probably room for investment once there's a strategic vision and plan that funders can actually see, look at, and want to invest in. Because I agree we need money to make sure that we are going after the excellence that we deserve. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Susan Adams-Lloyd.
Thank you, Jim. I think it's an excellent time for us to rethink what the University of Minnesota can deliver to the state. And with regard to excellence, keeping that as a top priority, look at completely different paradigms and how to service academic excellence. I can speak from my experience at Harvard University that there are other universities across the country that are reinventing what that return on investment is relative to the brick and mortar institutions that they have, creating virtual learning spaces that are funded not only very differently but brings in other costs or opportunities for revenue, and therefore it's a perfect time to look at not only public-private partnerships as well as new ways of learning and new ways of investing with new streams of revenue.
Thanks, Susan. Mary Davenport.
Thank you. When balancing affordability with quality and excellence, the state of Minnesota cannot afford to sacrifice that quality and excellence for cost savings. We need to really take a look at where we're cutting, how we're reinvesting or reallocating funds that currently exist. And I'd like to give a special shout out and thank the Minnesota Legislature for reaffirming their intent to fund the share of government and private at the two-thirds, one-third share. That represents the value that is placed by the legislature on higher education in the state. We also need to attend to the fact that access and affordability go hand in hand. So as we reach out to give access to higher education, we must attend to that affordability through the different measures of revenue and expense.
Thank you, Mary, and thank you, Region candidates. We're going to move on now to questions from the audience and social media, and we can still accept questions, both from the UMAA staff who are handing out question cards and Twitter, and you can reach us at UMN Alumni on Twitter. So here's our first question. If you could change one thing about the university, what would you change and why? You have 45 seconds for your response. We'll start with Robert Eddy.
Thank you. I would make it better. And when I mean that, when I say that, I mean the academic rankings of this school. I think people want to come to a university because it is a good university. It doesn't mean that it's cheap. It might mean that it has a good football team, but we would hope that's not the only reason. But I think that's what attracts good students. It attracts good faculty. It attracts grant dollars. It attracts notoriety. It does everything that we want to do if we are better and the best that we can be.
Thanks, Robert. Eileen Herr.
The one thing that I would change about the University of Minnesota is to make it accessible to all students, so that it can educate and reach the best and the brightest mind, and that it will provide opportunities for students to flourish and to grow. So I would focus on students and making sure that we recruit, retain, and provide them quality space. That's the second item, I guess. Having infrastructure that will meet the needs of a new and developing workforce.
Thanks, Eileen. Dean Johnson.
I'm going to second the motion of my colleague to the right about access for Minnesota students. One of the things that I have learned along with my colleagues over the last 12 years, I would expect the number one issue that people of Minnesota talk to us about is their sons and daughters and grandchildren not being able to get into the University of Minnesota. Does that mean that we lessen the requirements? No. Does that mean we lessen the standards? No. But I think the fact we have about 65% Minnesota students, 7% international, which is all great, and the rest come from other parts of the U.S. And we, in my opinion, because people live here, they pay taxes here, they have a right to access to this university and gain a diploma. I would change that and work toward that endeavor.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you. As I said before, I do want to see much more outreach to Minnesota students. When I served in Congress, I actually held college seminars around my district so that people, everyone, regardless of their diversity, their ethnic background, their status in life, their parents, their zip code, as we say now, in terms of geographical diversity, so that everyone could become aware of the opportunities. And the second thing that goes with that is I would work to create more flexibility so that all students can attend, so that the non-traditional student can find a place at the university. Then we can much more, we'd be much more able to benefit from what Minnesota students can provide. Anyone who wants to go to the U, we should find a way to make that happen.
Thanks, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
The one thing I would change is I would move faster in the centralization of the U. We have five campuses. Each of the campuses has their own strengths. They should learn more from each other. So on the Twin Cities campus, we might be able to move to more innovative methods of teaching and learning by learning from Crookston, which does a lot of online coursework. We might be able to learn from Morse, which has tuition waivers for Native American students. We should take the best practices of each institution and work together. And maybe it means going as far as to say, if I'm a student at Morris and I'm studying environmental studies, I spend a semester not abroad but at UMD at the Great Lakes Observatory, or somehow get all our campuses working together.
Thank you, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. It's nice to be almost last on this one because these were all very good questions. But I'm going to just speak up for safety. I don't like what I've learned over the last couple of weeks and heard from our student candidates that there's a feeling of being unsafe on our Twin Cities campus. I'm not sure if that is a shared thing in the other campuses. And there's so many more students living on campus now. We are a big city. So I would, if I could just wave a magic wand, that's the one I would want to fix. Safety.
Thanks, Lynn. Susan Adams Lloyd.
Thanks, Jim. I would change the perception that going to the University of Minnesota as a graduating senior from high school means a traditional kind of college education where you apply as a freshman and you go 4 years. I think that the perception that the university system is not accessible is a mistake. There are many portals into the university system, and I think the university needs to do a better job in educating way down into middle school the opportunities that young people have for an education throughout the university system that may include the Morris or Crookston campus, University of Minnesota Duluth, and other ways through the community college to plug in, whereas a four-year education may not be acceptable, but a five-year program or something that's more affordable allows them to complete that degree within the university system.
Thanks, Susan. Mary Davenport.
Thank you. I would aim for a greater embracing of excellence and access across the enterprise of the university. Having been on every campus of the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State, I've seen really amazing accomplishments and promising and best practices, and even with the challenges. But there's a lot to leverage there, building off of the local capacity and building off of that comprehensive university concept where each region really is served, and each region contributes to the whole, meaning the state of Minnesota. And that's not only just within the University of Minnesota, but really when we look at higher ed as an enterprise. Mm-hmm. And an example of that would be honing the transfer policies and procedures and outcomes, as an example.
Thank you, Mary. We'll move on now to our next question from the audience. The question is, to address tuition costs, would it be better for the state to contribute more to the U or expand the state grant for low and middle income students? Again, 45 seconds to answer this question, and we'll start with Eileen Herr.
I will say yes to both of the above. I do believe that the state legislature should prioritize higher education. In my professional career, being an advocate of education, K-12 has been very important to me, only because if my goal is to get them to college, I have to graduate them from high school. Once they're in college, particularly for students from my community, poor, low-income students, going to college education is a dream unless you can make it real by offering very competitive and good grants and scholarship opportunities for the students.
Thank you, Eileen. Dean Johnson.
One's economic status by way of one's family or individually should not bar one from attending the University of Minnesota. That is troubling to me. That's why we have the Pell Grants, which help lower-income folks. The University of Minnesota, if one's family income is between $40,000 and $140,000, there's scholarship monies available. And over that, one is expected one's own contribution and family contribution. Having said that, we need to be able to provide the access to individuals for their potential of learning and becoming a more learned citizen and contribute to our state. And economics should not be a barrier to that.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you. I, of course, support the scholarship program to help people that need the assistance. But the reason I focus on holding the line on tuition is that there's many people who do not qualify for that. They don't meet the rules. And what happens then is that their debt is being run up. It means they're not going to go on for advanced degrees because of the size of the debt. They're going to be discouraged in the first place. And as a result of that, it's just a spiraling problem. As I said in my interview, the first rule when you've dug a hole and you're in a hole, the first rule is to quit digging. And I think that's what we need to consider when it comes to the tuition situation at the university. We shouldn't just always look at that as the solution. We should actually look at these other revenue sources. We should look at the cost cutting and find other ways than to continue to raise that by the cost of living or more each year. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
I would answer that question by saying that I would urge the legislature to contribute more to the university with accountability by the university for funding programs for low and middle income students. And so I would not want to increase in tuition. I think one thing that hasn't been talked about is how tuition increases impact career choices that students make. I work in K-12 education, and people are not choosing to become teachers because of the debt load and the tuition costs. And so I think we need to keep tuition costs down to create a wide variety of people in the state of Minnesota in all occupations.
Thanks, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
I tend to agree with Sandy a lot. I like the notion of keeping the tuition low merely because it gives you a wide swath of people that can afford to come. But I'm also a scholarship kid, and I wouldn't have gotten to the university without that kind of help. I think the state has a vested interest in making sure that it stays affordable. Again, I go back to the, we have a workforce that needs to be educated. There's got to be some matching there. I also would be fearful of offering scholarships only to those scarce areas, because then that takes the whole accountability of why do we have a land-grant university to educate off the map. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Susan Adams Lloyd.
Thank you. This is where I think the partnership with the business community is keen idea right now, at a time where the labor force is dwindling due to aging baby boomers, and it would be of mutual interest to create partnerships like the recent one with Ecolab, where the training and development of trained employees to come on their workforce could partner with the university. The only having tuition and funded through grants or through scholarships is short-sighted. There's other work programs that can provide students with opportunities to have less of the burden. A workforce mired in chronic debt is not a productive one, so my primary concerns are towards those rising costs of tuition, and we need to look at job training that's affordable for all.
Thank you, Susan. Mary Davenport.
State support. State grant program, I would answer both and, although there's challenges in that, as we know, with the competition for funds at the state level. Need-based and academic-based funding, I agree that we really need to turn to our strategic partners, business and industry community, who benefit and have an investment in our higher education system as they look at their workforce. We also need to leverage what we have. Minnesota was a leader in post-secondary enrollment options, working with the K-12 concurrent enrollment, and there are many opportunities for students to access higher education and leverage those policy decisions that were made to the benefit of all people in Minnesota.
Thanks, Mary. Robert Eddy.
In 1970, when I first darkened some door at the University of Minnesota at Morrill Hall to register, probably, the legislature had a budget that was between two line items, education and transportation, 62% of the legislature's state budget. It is exactly half of that today. I think that besides the availability of scholarship and grants, which are not necessarily available to everyone, the legislature needs to decide that if they are going to have this university here, they are going to have to support it to some extent. And that support is typically available to everyone because it comes in the form of general tuition support.
Thank you, Robert. Well, we'll move on now to our final question from the audience. Again, 45 seconds to respond. If the legislature were to increase funding for the U, where would you direct that additional revenue? And we'll start with Dean Johnson.
The legislature, in its wisdom, increased our operating budget, the number of 17% to 18%, increased that, let's say, to 20%. Not sure without calculation what that would mean, but I think it needs to be directed toward offsetting of tuition. So that we don't have to raise tuition to maintain the quality of education. We also have the issue of faculty salaries. And I know that is a hot button, if you will, but if we are to be a world-class institution, we need to retain and hire world-class faculty in the matters of research and academics. It costs money. And so students and faculty.
Thank you, Dean. Bill Luther.
Thank you. I would say reinstituting the tuition freeze would be the single best thing that could be done. It would send a terrific message to the legislature and to the public in our state. And I think it would pay great benefits, both in the funding, future funding from the legislature, and in the kind of support that the state, that the university would enjoy from the people of the state. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Sandy Weiss.
And I agree with Congressman Luther. I would reinstitute the freeze on tuition. but additionally, I would invest in technology. One thing I've learned in my business experience is while there's a upfront initial cost and cost of software licenses, over the long haul, you can save money by using more technology, and I think that's something that you need right now.
Thanks, Sandy. Lynn Abramson.
You know, I hate to duck this one, but that's what I'll have to do. I think that I am too uninformed to know where that money should best be used, and I would have to say that it's up to the university administration and the Board of Regents to look at what their priority list is. While I clearly favor the tuition piece, I'm not sure that's the best bang for the buck because I'm not in that circle right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Susan Adams Lloyd.
I do agree on the freeze on tuition, and I would agree with Sandy. Technology and a virtual platform is not only key for being competitive, but that investment allows there to be cost saving in the future and creates an accessibility across the region and across the state for students relative to not only educational expenses, but the living expenses that go with being a student during that time. So an investment there would be solid and a good return back to the state.
Thanks, Susan. Mary Davenport.
An increase in funding would be welcome. I'm wondering how much that increase is because that would dictate how I would think about that question. The tuition freeze is not as simple as it may sound because there's inflation and other cost factors that are rising. I would want to look at the data and know about student success. So are we increasing gaps in graduation by our different populations? Do we need to focus on different needs across the university in terms of program improvement, accreditation issues, equipment, facilities? So it's a huge question. And I would look at a huge investment as being welcome, but in reality, it's way complicated.
Thanks, Mary. Robert Eddy.
Thank you. This typically falls into two buckets, so to speak, when you talk about a big legislative increase, operations and capital. Under the operations side, tuition support is usually always welcome. Research and faculty retention in the form of typically salaries, but also facilities and staff and so forth, is something we need to do to retain our status as a land-grant university. And if you also got capital funding, infrastructure in the form of everything from buildings to technology, et cetera, is also needed.
Thanks, Robert. Eileen Herr.
Yes, I would prioritize affordability, looking at tuition, lowering it and making it affordable. And then secondly, I would look at capital investment. I was recently on the University Twin Cities campus, and some of the buildings that are the same as when I was there 20 years ago. Are they conducive to new thoughts, new learning, new ways that are best practices for students to best learn, best create, best innovators, new labs, new classrooms, and in effect, tearing down some old ones and putting up new ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. And to stay on time, we'll move now to the 30-second closing statements, and we'll proceed alphabetically by first name and start with Bill Luther.
Thank you. I had a feeling that would happen. Thanks to all of you for being here, everyone in the audience and everyone on social media. I think it's just terrific that there's this level of interest. After all, it's the people of our great state that have made the university the great institution it is today, so it's a credit to everyone. I think it's also a real credit to the university that there would be this level of interest in serving on the Board of Regents. And I think with all of us working together, I'm just confident that we're going to make the university even better in future years. So thanks again. Thanks to the other candidates, and thanks for everybody being here.
Thanks, Bill. Dean Johnson.
Thank you. It was education that gave this farm boy from Lanesboro, Minnesota, a start on life. I want everyone else to have the same opportunities that I've had in by being I was in the Army for 38 years, 28 years in the legislature, 12 years as a member of the Board of Regents, but it was education. As an incumbent regent, every meeting that I go to, I talk to students and I talk to faculty. As I started my presentation, it's important that we listen to faculty and students. And so I'm asking again for the support of the legislature so I can continue to gain the confidence of the people of this state, the legislature, donors, and alumni, and continue to make the University of Minnesota even a greater institution than it is today.
Thank you, Dean. Eileen Herr.
Yes, thank you. My work and lived experiences have taught me that education is the greatest equalizer to all the issues that are very, very important to me: economic, social, racial, and gender justice. The university has a role and responsibility to create the minds and the solution that we need for the future. And I'm very, very excited that I may be a part of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Eileen. Lynn Abramson.
Thank you. My CEO experience in healthcare governance and strategic planning are directly applicable to the university's needs today. I relish the opportunity to serve on the Board of Regents and give back to my alma mater and my state in such a meaningful way. I look forward to welcoming Joan Gable as the incoming president and supporting her as she works with all of us to lead the university to its next phase. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Mary Davenport.
Thank you for the thoughtful questions. I reiterate the importance of my successful experience in addressing higher education issues and what I offer in service to the university as a regent. I hope you find that I am the right candidate at the right time, high energy, passion, and knowledge to be a servant on behalf of all the people of Minnesota, and one who will seriously attend to and drive forward the rich legacy of our state's flagship university.
Thank you, Mary. Robert Eddy.
Thank you to the Alumni Association for having me here tonight and for all of the interest that we've seen tonight. I have been to all except two, I believe, of the Regents meetings in the last 4 years. And I've listened to the problems and the successes that they've had and have, I think, now a better feel for what the operation of the board is, and I'd hope to apply my previous board experience to the operation of the University of Minnesota.
Thanks, Robert. Sandy Weiss.
In the opening statement and Q&A, I talked a lot about my professional experience and my volunteer experience on U of M-related boards. I think if I were in the audience, I'd want to know, what type of person are you? What kind of regent will you be? And in answering that question, I would describe myself as calm, creative, and collaborative. I work well with a team, I work well with other people, and I always roll up my sleeves to get things done. If elected or selected to be a regent, I'll continue working as a business leader, and I think that's important because I'll stay in touch with our economy and our workforce. Thanks.
Thanks, Sandy. Susan Adams Lloyd.
Thank you, Alumni Association and state leaders here tonight. I'm from a four-generation Gopher family, and I'm honored to be considered for one of the at-large positions. Our candidates here are all very qualified, and I'm inspired by all of you, especially the student candidates. I'm here to share my business acumen and vast governance experience to an institution that I love and to which I owe much. My unique perspective, expertise, broad view, open mind, and heart would allow me to be a supportive, responsible, and collaborative regent. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, and thanks to each of you regent candidates for being with us tonight and for your interest in serving as a member of the Board of Regents. On behalf of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, thanks to all of you in the audience for attending the Regent Candidate Forum. We now invite all of you to join us upstairs at the Legislative Library for a reception. It's on the sixth floor, where you will have an opportunity to meet the candidates individually and ask them questions. Let's give all of the candidates a big hand.